Hi to all our listeners. Thank you for tuning into our podcast.
Before we get started, this is our first podcast episode, so I think we should introduce ourselves. Who wants to start first?
I can go. Hi, I'm Layla. I'm a third-year student at the University of Chicago.
Hi, I'm Kimberly. I'm also a third-year at UChicago.
And hello, I'm Kanatu, and I'm also a third-year student. This podcast is a product of the collective efforts of the Mapping Global Chicago students. This year, our challenge was to tackle issues on environmental justice in diaspora.
To do this, we worked closely with a community garden in the east side of Pilsen called El Paseo Community Garden. We got very active with the garden through its stewardship days, film screenings, and other events like the Garden's Mother Day event. Before speaking on the garden itself, I think it's best that we ground ourselves in the area, Pilsen, by looking at its history. Layla, would you like to take it away?
Yeah, of course. Do you have any specific historical questions you are interested in?
Well, in general, would you say you're familiar with Pilsen and Chicagoland?
Yeah, a little. So I moved to Chicago just for university, and I've become really familiar with the Hyde Park area. But through this class and our research efforts, I've also become a little more familiar with the Pilsen area as well. However, I would definitely not go so far as to say I'm an expert on either area.
Oh, of course. Well, can you tell us what you've learned through your research? How far back did you look?
Yeah, so I tried to go as far back as I could with census data and general population data, but in doing so, I discovered something pretty interesting. I realized that on official documents and in population data, the definitions of Mexican and Hispanic have varied greatly over time. For example, 1930 was the one and only census that categorized Mexican as its own independent racial identity. But even more shocking to me was that it wasn't until 1960 that people could self-identify their race. Before that point, someone's race was determined by the census takers, with many non-white races being classed as black. Then, in 1970, for the first time, questions about Hispanic origin were included on the official U.S. Census. I think what I'm trying to get at with this is that all this talk about identification demographics, it's important to remember that this information does not always reflect how people truly identify themselves or their communities. And all this to say, the bulk of my historical research starts around the 1950s and 60s and works from up there to today.
I think that's pretty interesting, especially since identity is a big part of finding or creating communities. Can you tell us a little bit more about what the population of Pilsen looked like throughout the years then?
Of course. It seems like the well-known predominantly Mexican population of today's Pilsen really began in the 1950s. Before then, it was largely a working-class immigrant city with people mainly coming from Czechoslovakia and the surrounding countries. However, after the post-World War II white flight left neighborhoods such as Pilsen in rough shape, there was a large push for urban renewal programs from city developers that inevitably pushed minority groups living in Chicago out of their neighborhoods. This period of urban renewal and rebuilding was really what pushed the Mexican and Hispanic communities into Pilsen, first with the building of the Stevenson Expressway in 1956, and then with the construction of the University of Illinois Chicago downtown campus in the early 1960s. Time after time, the Mexican and Hispanic communities were displaced in favor of urban renewal projects that did not offer any benefits to them.
Was the shift in population sudden, or was there some gradual movement of the Hispanic community into Pilsen?
Surprisingly, although the post-World War II white flight did push Hispanic communities into Pilsen starting in the 1950s, actually looking at the census data, it appears to be a slower process until around 1980. Between 1980 and 1990, the shift in population is very sudden. The ratio of white residents to Hispanic residents flips quickly, with a 1990 census report showing a predominantly Hispanic population.
That's all very interesting, but how does that tie into the formation and history of the community garden?
That's a great question. As communities from all over Mexico and the global south were pushed together in this neighborhood, there's a strong drive to create a space to properly acknowledge and celebrate these histories. Many different cultural projects have been born out of this new Hispanic community, including the El Paseo Community Garden. But I will turn to Kanatu to give a more in-depth look at the creation and history of the El Paseo Community Garden specifically.
All right. So what might not be commonly known about the garden is that it sits on what was once the Burlington Railroad. By the time this railroad was no longer in use, the surrounding area had long been heavily polluted and contaminated, dubbing it a brown area where nature struggles to survive. In the summer of 2016, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency began the environmental remediation along the first phase of the El Paseo Trail on Sangamon Street from 16th Street to 21st Street. These efforts included the removal of contaminated soil within the existing Burlington Railroad property, This cleanup was completed in the spring of 2018.
Did this have any effects on how the garden was built?
Yes, it did, actually. So, despite the efforts to remove the waste, the land still has its limitations. When chatting with Paula, one of the co-directors of the garden, she shared that the usable soil does not go very deep into the ground, so they are unable to plant trees and have made raised beds to plant vegetables, herbs, and flowers. Another thing to know is that the Burlington Railroad still owns the land that the garden is on, so that has an effect on how the land is used.
Can you tell us a bit more about the founding of the garden itself?
Sure. So El Paseo was founded in 2009 by local residents in the area before it became a green space. The city of Chicago decided to build a sidewalk for the tenants of an affordable housing unit being built nearby, and then they approved the creation of a small community garden on the contaminated lot, but provided no funding for it. Undaunted, the founders, Sally Gordon and Ron Gordon, decided to push forward and start the work of making the community space that we know today.
And just for our listeners who've never been to the garden, can you describe what it looks like?
Oh, sure thing. The garden is the combination of lots in between Colorton Street and 21st Street that has a multi-use walking trail that runs through its center. The different sections of the garden are allocated to various cultivating and functional spaces. As for the elements within the garden, El Paseo Community Garden features raised garden beds that grow seasonal vegetables and flowers, art installations such as murals and usable furniture, different types of terrain such as the prairie, traditional grass, and the remnants of the Burlington rail lines. They also have made an outdoor classroom, an apiary that houses bees, and a permaculture site. Though, please note that the permaculture site is going through some rebranding and will soon have a new name.
Oh, they feature a lot of things for a garden that size. And if you, the viewers, want to see it all together, you can volunteer the garden for their Sunday stewardship days. These stewardship days run from around April to November and are on Sundays from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m.
Yes. Myself and many of my classmates had the opportunity to go to these stewardship days. So I went to volunteer at the beginning of the season and helped with weeding the prairie and preparing the garden for planting. Aside from actually gardening, they host other events like holiday celebrations and teaching events. I also recently went to a film screening of a new documentary on the garden called Nuestra Gerencia, which focuses on the senior members of the garden and the relationship they have with gardening in El Paseo. They share stories of their childhood in various countries in Latin America and the Caribbean and their experiences living in Chicago. If you want to see the film, look out for the next screening on their website. Kimberly or Layla, I know you've also been to the garden. Actually not with me, but do you have any memorable experiences from when you went?
Yeah, I can just like point out this one. I can point out one of the times I did go to the garden for the stewardship day. It was cold and it was like on and off rain or like light drizzle basically that whole day. And so it kind of made things slightly hard for us to continue working. But the volunteers, like I guess you could say like the lead volunteers there, continue to work despite the rain, and even as like we left, they were very much so still going through their work. So I thought it was pretty like inspirational just seeing how much they care for the garden and that space, wanting to like fix it up for when it gets warmer and more people are more willing to come and visit the garden pretty much.
I also had really great experiences with the garden. The first couple of times I've tried to go, it was raining, just like Kimberly was saying, lots of on and off drizzling, and we had to cancel some days, we had to end early on some other days, but on the days when it was really sunny, like one of my most recent visits, it was just a great space to be. I am not much of a gardener, but they were very encouraging, very helpful in giving us activities to help with, and it was just great seeing how some of the flowers and some of the crops are already blooming, and just being able to see the kind of community that they've built and the friendships and the bonds they have with each other was really great.
And I can definitely say that I'm looking forward, of course, to when it is very warm and sunny and things really are blooming, because we've seen pictures of the garden in class, for example, and it looks absolutely stunning. So I'm looking forward to that. And so for our listeners as well, definitely check out the garden if you can. Please go ahead and volunteer. And I guess going back to Kanatsu here, do you have any other like notable things to share about the garden itself?
Yes, I do. So in recent years, the garden has been recognized for the community that they have built and have received some awards. In 2018, El Paseo received a special award called Larger Than Life from the Chicago Excellence in Gardening Awards. CEGA is Chicago's only citywide gardening honors, recognizing the work that goes into making Chicago a healthier, more beautiful, and sustainable place. The competition for this award represented 33 wards and 60 neighborhoods within the city, and the gardens featured ranged from little parkways to school farms with animals and greenhouses. Additionally, in 2020, El Paseo received the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation Creative Placemaking Award. This award recognizes projects in the Chicago region that leverage the power of arts, culture, and creativity to serve a community's interests while driving a broader agenda of change, growth, and transformation in a way that builds character and quality of a place.
I love that they're being recognized for their incredible work. So after achieving this much, what's next for the garden?
As for the future plans, they plan to expand about half an acre to include a dog run, community stage, and a fitness area. Also a nature play area for children and several more gathering spaces and plant areas. The garden aims to connect with other nature trails via natural prairie paths and potentially Greater Chicago trails. Kimberly Among Us has done the most research on the trails. Can you tell us more about what questions you asked and what did you find?
Yeah, so the main question I want to tackle regarding the community garden is related to gentrification. However, I will preface that we do have another group solely dedicated to gentrification and policy. And so they'll speak on these topics that I bring up more in depth in their podcast episode. I think it's safe to say that my research is instead trying to invoke more thought about our relationships with nature and community gardens. I know that sounds like a weird jump, but I promise that it all circles back to El Paseo. So yeah, are you guys aware of the Bloomingdale Trail?
The 606?
Yes, exactly. So in 2006, there was a Pilsen Quality of Life plan that intended to connect the Pilsen Corridor, which is where El Paseo Community Garden is located, to a 4-mile trail that connects a few other corridors, such as Cermak and Little Village. A few of the plan's main goals were to expand housing options for Pilsen residents, build a stronger neighborhood economy, make Pilsen a self-reliant, family-oriented community, and develop educational opportunities for residents of all ages. Of course, this sounds much better on paper than how it was slowly executed. I wasn't able to see when exactly the trail was named, but it is known as the Paseo Trail or El Paseo Trail. This caused the community garden, due to its proximity and location and name, to be highly criticized. Paula had initially brought it up during one of our many conversations regarding the trail, but I found it very odd. The 606 isn't even in the same neighborhood as El Paseo, and yet still served to be an issue for the garden. For example, in one of the articles that I read from the Chicago Sun-Times, Alderman Danny Solis and George Cardenas had this to say about the Paseo Trail. Solis called the path a poor man's 606, and Cardenas said that there would be no mistaking Paseo for the $95 million Bloomingdale Trail.
Wow, it's kind of like he's saying, let's really emphasize the difference between white communities and Latinx communities.
Right. But this had me thinking really hard about the comparison being brought up in the first place and why Paula and other members of the garden and the Pilsen community are rightfully annoyed. In the class, we discussed in detail about how removed humans are from nature. So parks and gardens become hot commodities or amenities to bring in an influx of developers and realtors. This is very much so the case for the members of the Pilsen community. In two articles that I've read, one called Brownsfield to Greensfield and the other called Pilsen Community Split Over Who Will Benefit from the Paseo Trail. By the way, to the listeners, these articles will be linked in our sources section of the website. All references will be, so please look out for that if you want to read on what we've read. Anyway, so both articles reference crime in relation to nature. In New York City, the community gardens have improved property values, enhanced neighborhood aesthetics, and reduced crime rates sufficiently to interest developers in investing in the neighborhood. And the plan for the Paseo Trail in Chicago encourages a larger presence of people using the streets for positive activities, which will help reduce crime and their perception of danger. So did you guys notice anything in the quotes I just read?
I definitely noticed the connection of lower income communities to crime and also the insinuation that these areas aren't already being used for positive activities.
Yeah, very true. Something else that I noticed was in the quote regarding New York City, community gardens are specifically being used to interest developers in investing in the neighborhood. So then what does that mean for the residents that are currently residing there once those developers do get interested?
Well, if the developers do get interested, that definitely means that those communities are at risk of being pushed out again, just as Layla was mentioning before.
Yes, you get it. So thinking back to what Layla said about post-World War II white flight leaving neighborhoods behind, renewal programs spring up for beautification purposes. And so this is kind of how I started to understand how Rails with Trails projects are all connected. Because of the existing examples of these projects and seeing who benefits from these resources, typically white people, when you apply these plans to predominantly minority communities that could potentially be of lower income, it is simply now just the thought of having these green spaces that drastically heightens the chances for gentrification and thus displacement, which you mentioned, of course, Layla, and what Paula has already mentioned affected many of the previously recurring members of the garden. They've had to move to many other neighborhoods, like the Yard, Cicero, outside of Pilsen in general, so like the suburbs, and any and everywhere that was more affordable than their quote-unquote affordable homes in Pilsen. So then, what will happen to El Paseo in the future? Paula has mentioned how closely the garden and a few other gardens are working with NeighborSpace, a nonprofit urban land trust that protect Chicago's community gardens from developers through property ownership and insurance coverage. Not only will Paula and the other garden leads continue working with NeighborSpace, but Paula wants to acquire some of the abandoned property in the area of the garden to ensure that the garden has a firmer defense against being bought out by investors and developers. And then I guess I want to end off my piece here with just asking you guys and the listeners to think about your own relationship with nature. There's so many ways I can like pose this question, but I want you to focus on this one. How exactly can we make sure that all communities are able to truly reconnect with nature in a way that does not harm the residents?
Wow, that is honestly a great question. And off the top of my head, I don't feel like I have a solid answer, honestly. But I definitely think we should all take some more time to reflect and think on this. And this is definitely something to consider while looking at the work and web pages that our other classmates have done. So this seems like a good place to leave off for today, actually. Thank you for joining us here today, and please be sure to check out the other podcast episodes on the website.
Thank you.